Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today as I continue to broadcast from downtown Denver, Colorado, but I'll be back to regular tomorrow. We'll be back to our regular environs. Notice I didn't say normal. We never use the word normal around here, and it's not much normal about any of the things that we do, except when we're talking to David Dossie. He's a pretty normal guy. He's a pretty cool guy, too. He's one of the most exciting members of our Brain Trust. He's a patent attorney. You know how exciting those guys are. And he's actually, we prefer to think of them as intellectual property attorneys. I think that's the more correct 21st century term. He's a partner in the law firm of Gallagher and Dossie, and he's our good friend. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim.
You know, I know why you went into the patent, the intellectual property business.
Why
is
that?
A lot of people think you went into it for the money, but I know why you really went into it.
And that is?
For the groupies, right?
Oh, right. Right. It's for the exciting people I get to work with. Sometimes we bore ourselves.
Speaking of excitement, eBay had a little excitement recently, didn't they?
That's right. Big,
this is a big case
last
just
week.
Happened, and I want you to tell us, set us up now. Tell us, give us a little bit of the history.
Sure.
About what the issue is and how they, you know, how the court proceedings played out and why we should care about what happened.
Well, last week, Supreme Court had a unanimous decision that was probably the most important patent decision in the last 10 years. And it was a case that involves eBay being sued by a company called Merck Exchange. And Merck Exchange owned a patent on essentially an online auction type of system where you got to rate feedback of the seller and purchaser, et cetera.
Right.
Obviously, eBay infringes that. That seems to be no doubt. So then it was just an issue of whether Merck Exchange could get an injunction against eBay to make them stop infringing their patent. And the traditional rule on that was developed in the 1980s by the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, and it was very in favor of the patent owners, I should say.
Right.
And basically, you always got a permanent injunction unless it was a very unusual case. So traditionally, Merck Exchange would have been able to get an injunction to make eBay stop infringing their patent.
Okay.
And then it went in an appeal to the lower
court. So the trial judge ruled in favor of Merck Exchange.
Right. No, the trial judge went in favor of eBay.
The
appeals judge then said, no, you know, this is the traditional rule with patents. Went in favor of Merck Exchange. The Supreme Court agreed to hear that issue. And the Supreme Court came back and said, no, that traditional rule in favor of patent owners just goes too far. And the rule for injunctions with patents really should be more similar to the traditional rule of injunctions in any other case, and therefore we're sending this back to the lower court to decide on the injunction issue.
Hmm. So they basically ruled back in favor of eBay.
It's a sticky situation because one of the prior courts basically had denied the injunction, so eBay wasn't going to have to stop infringing.
Right.
But now that it's going back to be heard under the new guidelines set by the Supreme Court, there is the the danger that eBay could be hit with an injunction.
They could be in jeopardy. Well, if I'm not mistaken, I read a little bit about this, and isn't the two words may and might, or may and can? There's a one point where you can insert the word may or can. Or you know, maybe it makes it sort of absolute in one way, and the other way it makes it subjective. Is that right?
Well, the new the traditional test for injunctions is a four-part test, and it basically the court is just supposed to weigh the weigh a number of factors on a case-by-case basis. Whereas the traditional rule with patents was you got an injunction if the patent was held to be infringed and was valid. So now it is a very subjective test going forward based upon, you know, the a case-by-case analysis.
Well, David, I know why you're following this, because this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I'm following it is because I have no life. But there are people out there listening who actually have lives and who don't do this for a living. And when we come back after these messages, I want you to tell us why they should care.
Absolutely.
Why small business owners should care about this case. Folks, we're going to get into the good stuff right after these messages. Now we've got to sell some things and pay a few bills. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. David Doss is our guest. Stay with us.
Your name in lights above it. This is your big debut. It's like a dream.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, visiting with our good friend David Dossi, our intellectual property attorney in the Brain Trust, and my intellectual property attorney. David, as we went to the break, I made the comment that you've been following the eBay case that recently went before the Supreme Court, because that's what you do. I've been following it because I don't have a life. That's one of the things that I do. But for the average person out there, what does this matter?
It matters because it essentially makes it can make it more difficult for a patent owner to get an injunction, which for most of your listeners would probably be on the receiving end of a patent infringement lawsuit. So that usually would work to your listeners' benefit, because a company that does not produce product, let's say a university or what's called as just a patent holding company, where they just own intellectual property and threaten other companies to try to arrange licensing agreements or sue them for patent infringement, it is now very difficult for those companies to get injunctions. So if your client is sued by a university or a patent holding company, they no longer have a real threat of injunction to be used against them in enforcing them into a settlement agreement. So, for instance, you know, we talked before about that NTP case versus RIM, the BlackBerry case.
Right, I was just about to ask you, how does this reconcile with the research in motion case?
If that case had not settled a month or two ago, after this Supreme Court hearing, that settlement value would have been, I would guess, $100 million less or more.
Uh-huh.
Because that BlackBerry no longer would feel so, wouldn't feel like they had their arm twisted behind their back, that
because
they might actually...
The new ruling actually devalued the previous ruling for research in motion, didn't it?
Yes.
So I wonder how they feel about that right now.
Well, they're feeling happy that they settled the case.
But they paid a whole lot more money than they probably would have.
Oh, well, research in motion, right. Yeah, they're upset that they didn't wait another 2 months.
Can they go back and take another bite at the apple now with this new information?
I doubt it, yeah.
The check's already cleared the bank, probably.
Well, the settlement agreement's probably already inked, right?
Yeah.
So, overall, I'd say it's not going to significantly change the number of injunctions granted, but with this upturn in litigation related to patent holding companies against manufacturers of products, you know, one of your listeners that produces fences or whatever, it helps them out because it makes it more difficult for that bare patent holding company that doesn't produce a product to get an injunction.
But if you're a small company that and you know you invent things and you use them on a very small scale, you don't really conquer the world with your invention. You have and some big company takes a variation of that, maybe unknowingly, but they go out and they do something similar, but they conquer the world with it. Then for small businesses in that case, this ruling is actually to their disadvantage.
Right. If you're a small technology company that is not actually producing product and selling it, then this decision is not in your favor.
But what if you are producing? Like I said, you're actually commercializing your patent. You're just doing it maybe on a small basis. Maybe you've only recently started it and you're still in prototype or something like that.
Right. And in that situation, I don't think this case tremendously affects whether you'd be able to get an injunction or not. It's always on a case-by-case basis, and I don't see it making a tremendous swing in that type of a situation.
Is the intellectual property jurisprudence, that body of law, that's a highly evolving body of law right now, isn't it?
Sure. Usually intellectual property or patent cases start off at the federal level. They are appealed to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in Washington, D.C., which hears all patent-related appeals. And then the only place to go really is the Supreme Court. So anytime you have a decision like this from the Supreme Court where they've agreed to hear an issue on a patent case, this is really making history.
Do you think that if you have a case like this, do you think that the average jury has the ability to understand the nuances of some of these cases and can render a verdict, a fair verdict?
When it comes down to issues of actually infringement and having to read the claims of a patent, it is extremely difficult and...
David, I'm not talking about intelligence. I'm talking about people who don't live in the world that you live in,
right,
that these companies live in. If you're not used to dealing in those kinds of issues, never mind your intelligence. You know, being able to come up to speed and render a verdict is tough, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the true danger. That's why so many patent infringement cases don't go to trial, because no one likes that uncertainty of the jury, whether they will, you know, they could go in favor of one side just because they have an attractive attorney.
Right, right. Well, what I'd like to do when we come back after this break is I'd like for you to give us some ideas, some suggestions that you would have on how we should proceed with our inventions or our intellectual property that in case in the future someone were to infringe upon it or whatever, to give us some ideas on how to set it up, and if we find somebody who's infringed upon our property, you know, what should we do? Should we sue them? Should we call them? Should we say, hey, guys, you know what you've done here? Can we work it out? How would you like to license my stuff? Why don't we do that instead of going to court? Give us some ideas on that. We'll do that right after these messages. It's 10 Till. David Dossie is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, having a great visit with our good friend David Dossie. David, give us your website, please.
It is www.invention-protection.com.
And that's for the law firm of Gallagher & Dossie out of the great state of Ohio. And, folks, if you have an intellectual property, patent, invention, copyright, service mark, registration, whatever question or if you're looking for someone to help you with that, I certainly recommend David, because as I told you before, he is my intellectual property attorney and he does a great job for us. I certainly recommend him to you. Can they contact you? You can find the contact information at your website, can't they, David?
Absolutely. Email, telephone.
David, as we went to the break, I asked you to tell us when we came back, What should we be thinking about? What are some of the steps that we should be taking to protect our property, to if we find somebody's infringing upon it, if we find out that somebody's out there using our stuff? And it could be as simple as somebody, you know, for the simplest thing to me, David, for a small business would be that somebody actually takes our brand. They take our name or some portion of our name or a brand promise or a jingle or something like that.
Sure.
And they use it maybe intentionally, maybe accidentally. A lot of times competitors will do that, or they'll try to do something close to what you've done if they find you're successful. What should we do? What's the first step?
Well, the first thing is just to make sure that, well, number one, as you always preach, recognize that you do have intellectual property and that you do need to protect it. And then you've got several avenues, the traditional ones being copyright protection for artistic works such as books, website content, computer programs, then probably the potentially the most valuable, trademarks and service marks for names, logos, etc., that identify you as being the producer of a certain good. And then you have patent rights for inventions or products that have a useful nature to them.
But let's say we've already done all that. We feel like we've gotten our stuff protected. We find somebody's using it. Maybe it's a big company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe if somebody, you know, for example, someone, a larger company, started using the term small business advocate once. And I just called them up and said, hey, guys, do you realize I've been doing this since 97? They said, we didn't. And guess what? They stopped.
Right.
I just made a phone call.
Mm-hmm. And that usually, you know, it's on a case-by-case basis, obviously, but usually that's the starting point, is either to have the head of the business give the opposing party, if you want to call them that,
Their peer in the other company,
a call and, you know, just try to point this out. And a lot of times, and I'd say majority of the time, it's innocent. You know, they didn't mean to, and if they had known it, they wouldn't have done it.
Or they might say, well, they might come back and say, okay, look, we think this property is going to make us a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
How much are you making with it? What if we just licensed it from you?
Right.
You might say, oh, I hadn't thought about that. Let's see. You know, it might be the best thing that ever happened to you.
Or, you know, frankly, in the alternative, if they have already spent a lot of money associated with that brand or that name, they may be willing to fight tooth and nail to, you know, assert that their use of it is not confusing with your use.
But the main thing you can't do is roll over.
Right. Right.
Otherwise, why create the property? Don't
right.
create intellectual property if you're not prepared to defend it.
Mm-hmm. And then you had mentioned, you know, do you sue the people right off the bat? And frankly, you shouldn't file a lawsuit unless you're prepared to see it all the way through, because there's always that danger.
Yeah. Yeah. And big companies sometimes will throw their weight around. So there really is a lot of strategy to how to take the steps, isn't there?
Yes. And, you know, one of the fortunate things, I think, for small business owners in terms of intellectual property enforcement is now you're seeing a gradual shift that some attorneys are taking those cases more on a contingent fee basis.
Right.
So that they don't have to come up with $1 million to cover their legal fees to fight a big company.
Right. Well, you just have to decide, you know, how much damage it is, and if it's something you want to continue with. But I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, as you continue into the 21st century, you know, the things that David and I have talked about, you might say, well, you know what, that's for other people. Well, every tick of the clock, these examples are going to be something that's going to be more part of your life in the future, and so you need to get started, you know, understanding how they work and educating yourself a little bit. And one of the ways you can do that is by listening to what David Dossi has to say. David, thank you for being here. As always, good job.
Thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
We'll see you next time. David Dossi, ladies and gentlemen, that's invention-protection.com. I hope you'll check out his website and use him to your advantage. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and you know this program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.